is something called a capacitor. All right? Now, what's a capacitor? A capacitor is essentially something that stores charge. This is a capacitor, okay? And we're going to talk about how we can store charge, why we want to store charge, and what we could do with it. Basically, what a capacitor usually is two pieces of conductor, all right, where one places a charge difference on the two different conductors, and they're separated by an insulator, so air in this case, okay? And what happens when let's say I have positive charge here and negative charge here, is I'm going to have an electric field. I'm going to have an electric field. I am going to have an electric field between the plates. Okay? And I don't have the rest of this. I'll do it on Monday, but on Thursday. But basically, I will have an electric field here between the plates. Now, what did we, maybe you recall, what is the expression for an electric field for an infinite plate or an infinite plane of charge? Exactly. Okay? So sigma over 2 epsilon naught. Exactly. So what that means is no matter where I am between these two plates, the electric field, as long as I'm not near the edge, the electric field is constant. Okay? And that's actually very useful. We'll try to talk about it a little bit. And we use these actually in a variety of ways in electric circuitry. One way that we use them is because this is actually a gap, all right, we can connect to a battery, and if I, for instance, had a capacitor, this is the symbol for a capacitor, connected it to a battery, okay, where I would have, say, negative and positive charge, what will happen is that this negative charge, well, let's say it this way, this positive charge will tend to take all the electrons here, will want to flow, will want to pass through the conductor over to that terminal of a battery. And so you'll end up with negative charge here, and this negative charge will push negative charge away from this other plate and create a positive charge. Okay? And so you'll end up with positive charge on one plate and negative charge on another. Now, let's try to do this a little more generally first, okay? Let's think about just a generic let's just think about just a very generic amount of conductor, all right? And over here, on this conductor, on the surface, I have a bunch of positive charge, okay, on the surface. And here, I have a bunch of negative charge. Now, actually, I jumped the gun a little bit. Let's just say they're conductors for the moment, okay? Forget how much charge is on them. They're neutral. Now let's say in this region is an insulator, so any charge here can't get to here, all right? It's just an insulator. So now let's say I put a battery here that has negative charge, and I put a battery here, and here's positive charge, okay? So what's going to happen? Well, this negative charge is going to want to spread out so that it's also on this plate, right? We've talked about this idea that the negative charge will tend to be spread around all of the conductor, and it will go onto the surface. So what will happen is I will end up with negative charge here on the surface of this conductor, okay? The positive charge will tend to draw electrons away from this conductor, Okay, this is a wire. This is a conductor connecting to the battery. So electrons will tend to flow away from this conductor, which will mean I will have a net positive charge, which again will show up only on the surface of the conductor. Okay. Now, this idea of it being on the surface, we've talked about before. Okay. If you have a question, ask it. It's fine. But we've covered that before. All we're doing is we're taking these two conductors and we're putting them such that there is a charge difference here, okay, from a battery. That's what a battery does. A battery has charge, you know, there's a charge difference between the terminals of a battery, okay? It actually turns out a battery and a capacitor are not all that different from each other, but this is just a black box. Let's ignore exactly what a battery is, okay? We just have a way of putting negative charge connecting it here, positive charge connecting it here, okay? Now, in this particular case, I have positive charges here, so I have field lines that emanate from this conductor, right? And they all come away from this conductor, and I'm not going to be tall enough, but okay. All right. So you have field lines that are emanating from the field lines always emanate from positive charge, come into negative charge. Okay? And so you have field lines that are emanating, and basically all of these, if I could draw it, that would come around, you know, and it would reach over to here. Okay? All the way this happens is the net charge of this battery is zero. So that means there's as much negative charge here as positive charge here. Okay? And what that means is that there will be just as much positive charge here as there is negative charge over here. Right? Okay? So every line that comes out of this surface will then come into this surface because they're connected to the battery. All right? Okay. Now, okay, does that make sense with the field lines first? All right, now let's consider a case where we have a little more controlled situation. We have parallel plates. Now, we already did this situation where we studied the charge on an infinite plane. And we're going to make use of that information in a minute. So let's take our battery, and we're going to connect this battery to the two plates of this, of to these two conducting plates. All right? Okay? So, what charge is going to show up on this plate? Somebody want to hazard a guess? Yep. Okay. And by extension, this one then becomes negative. Okay. Now, now all of the field lines inside this gap are going to emanate from the positive side, and they're going to go to the negative side. Right? So this is all, these are E field lines. Now, on the edges here, you're going to get this situation, you know, these lines are going to not be parallel. But in this region, in here, E is perpendicular to, let's do it this way, is parallel to the area vector. So remember, the area vector is perpendicular to a surface. So the E field and the area vector are pointed in the same direction. They're pointed across the gap. And these lines, all of these lines, you could E sub I or whatever you want to call it, these are all parallel to each other. Okay? And you also know that the magnitude of E is uniform. Now, why do we know those things? Well, we're actually going to take this in a special case. This distance, D, and let's say we have a length, L, of these plates. This is all true if D is much smaller than the length. Because when D is much smaller than the length, in this gap region, we can essentially treat these as infinite plates. Okay? And since we've connected to them to a battery, these are planes of charge, just like we talked about in the last couple chapters. Okay? So this plate becomes essentially, in this gap, an infinite plane or surface of uniform charge density. And this becomes an infinite plane or surface of uniform charge density, the opposite sign. But it's the same amount of charge. Okay? And because these are infinite planes, from the purposes of being inside of here, that's an approximation, but it's a close enough one, that means that E is parallel to A, and E is uniform. Because again, well, I've erased it, but as one of you mentioned, that E field is equal to this only. So it doesn't matter how far from the plates you are. And then we had also talked about the orientation, that the lines of the E field are always going to be parallel to the area vector from that surface. Okay? Now, what we would actually like to do is... Okay. What we'd actually like to do is we'd like to understand if you put some potential difference. So a battery, by having this charge difference, places a potential difference across its terminals. Okay? And you already know this in some way. When you have a 9-volt battery, that's a battery such that the terminals, which have opposite charges, there's enough charge in that battery such that the potential difference between this term, the positive and negative terminals, is 9 volts. Okay, that's what that battery is telling you. If it's a wall socket, I mean, we could ignore the alternating current aspect of it, but you've got a 120-volt socket, that's telling you that any instant in time, the potential difference between the one prong and the other prong is 120 volts. Okay? So with a battery, we have a potential difference. Okay? Because there's an electric field here. I've got positive and negative charge. This battery itself, there's an electric field and whatever. So by doing this to this capacitor, all right, I've got this separation D between the plates. Does somebody recall, if I know the electric field and I know the distance between the distance across which I care, how do I calculate the potential difference? Does anybody remember the expression? That's going to come up when we start talking about capacitance, but that's a reasonable. So what it would be, the difference in voltage is equal to the electric field, this is just magnitude now, okay, times D, okay? And this was an example we did in the last chapter for these infinite plates, okay? It comes from the integral of E dot ds, but the dot product goes to 1 because, you know, you're going in the same direction here. So this is the voltage. This is the potential difference between the two plates, okay? Now, what I'd like to know is how much charge I could store on these plates given the voltage, all right? So to be able to do that, I don't have this in terms of it. I need to know, what is this? This is a function of the charge I can put on the plate. So I want to know what that expression is. Okay. So, all right. Let's do that. Okay. Let's erase some of this. Okay, now, these are infinite plates, and what I want to do is I want to actually calculate what the E field is in terms of some amount of charge that would be carried on this conductor. So, well, first of all, does that suggest a strategy, how we would calculate this to you? D is much less than L means that in this gap, at least if you're away from the edges, in this gap, these plates could be considered to be essentially infinite planes of charge. Okay? That's an approximation that allows you to use what we did in previous chapters for the E field near infinite plane of charge, or the potential. That's true, yeah. Well, yes, that's right. That's right. Well, yeah, that, I mean, that formula doesn't, yeah, let me think about the best way to say that. The situation that we have two, that goes for one layer, and the answer might be straightforward to you, but we have two planes here that have charge on them. So we need to consider what the electric field is. At the end of the day, we're going to do the same thing. So what we did to get that number that you guys mentioned is we used Gauss's law. That's the answer that I was looking for. So we want to know, you know, what is the E field in here? Well, okay, this has got two planes of charge with opposite charges. That's a little different. But what we did before is we had one plane and we used Gauss's law to figure out what is the E field near that plane of charge. Okay, so that's what we have to do this time. Okay, so, all right, let's set that up. So first of all, okay, so Gauss's law is the electric flux is equal to E dot dA, which equals qn over epsilon naught. Okay? Now, does anybody, we got to draw a surface here to do this. Does anybody want to suggest a surface that would allow me to calculate the electric field in this gap? Well, a circle won't, a circle won't take advantage of the fact that these are sort of flat surfaces. Okay? I heard somebody, at least the first letter, right? Cylinder. And how is it oriented? How is the axis of the cylinder oriented? Left, right, up, or down? Left, right? Up or down? Yeah. So, okay, good try. So what you could do is you could say, okay, let's draw a cylinder here like this. All right? So it's going to puncture one of the plates that we have here in the capacitor. All right? So this is our Gaussian surface. Now, this is all conductor. Okay? So what do we know about the E field inside of a conductor? It's zero. All right? So in here, E is zero. Okay? So let's step back for a second, actually. So what we want to know is we want to try to calculate what the flux is through this whole surface using Gauss's law, and we want to try to use that to determine what is the E field in here. Okay? So by picking a cylinder, we can do that. Why? Because the flux is going to be equal to the integral for, let's call this part of the surface A, let's call this B, and then let's call the side C. So it's E dot dA A plus E dot dA B plus the integral E dot dA over surface C. Now, what can we say about the integral over surface B? You kind of just said it, but it's zero. So this is zero because E is zero. We just said it. Okay? So that's zero. What can we say about the E dot dA for surface C? I think I heard it, but okay, why? Yes, or it's perpendicular to the area, right? Okay, good. So that's zero. So we just got to worry about this one. Now, what can we say? We can simplify this. First of all, we don't need to do an integral because it's just a flat surface. So there's no, every other point on this surface will have the same value. So now we're down to this. The electric flux equals E dot A. And we can use A sub A, the subscript, the area vector for surface A. Okay? We can simplify that because E, the direction of E is constant, the direction of A is constant, the magnitude of E is constant, so we don't have to do the integral. It just drops out this way. And since we know that E, the orientation of E and A, okay, this could go away as well. So this just becomes EA. Because the as we said earlier, the electric field and the area vector in that in the gap are parallel. All right? Now, and so we know that this equals Q in over epsilon naught. Okay? Now I need to make sure that I, okay. So what this allows me to do is I can rewrite this. I can just divide both sides by A. So now I have Q in over A epsilon naught. So the electric field is going to be equal to the amount of charge. We got what we wanted, right? We wanted this electric field in terms of the charge that we had. So it's equal to the electric field. Sorry. The electric field is equal to the amount of charge. And it has a term in there that's the area. So if the total area is large, I can store more charge. If the total area is, sorry, if the, did I say that wrong? Yeah, if the area is small, then I have a stronger electric field for a given charge, is a way to say it. Okay? And then this is just the constant, permittivity constant. Now, I could also write this just to be example. So this is charge divided by area. So what symbol is that? What symbol that we've used before? Yeah. So this is just sigma over epsilon naught. Now, this is actually a useful check for you because now what you're saying is, okay, well, we knew before that it was sigma over 2 epsilon naught, but that was for one plate. That's what we did before. But we have two plates here. Okay, so it's double that. Yes? Say it again.
In that integral, mm-hmm.
So this is in the integral, this is a small piece of A. So, you know, what you'd really want to do is have this cylinder probably be the whole area if you want it. It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't matter because it's the amount of charge that corresponds to that area. Okay? So when we finish, we don't care about just this small cylinder. We want to know the amount of charge of the whole plate. So, of course, we would pick an area that was the whole, that encompassed the whole plate. Okay? So, okay, but we don't really, I mean, this is great. This is so that that kind of jives with what you might have expected. But this is the expression that we want because what we wanted to know is what is the, we want to know if we have a voltage, how much charge can we store? So we need this in terms of that. Now, then we can go a little further. Keep running out of space. So we said this. Okay. So we could substitute in for the electric field. And so this becomes Q in D over epsilon naught A. Okay. So if I have a potential difference delta V, then I will store, we can get rid of the in now because we don't need to worry about, for the reasons we just said, we don't need to worry about the surface that we're dealing with. This is just the total surface on the plate. If I have a delta V across these two plates, then the charge that I store is proportional to that voltage with this geometric term. And that geometric term includes the distance between the two plates and the area. Okay? So what can I say? Well, there's a couple different ways to think about this, but if I, let's do it this way. Let's say we wanted to know I have a given voltage and I want to know how much charge I can store. All right? So then I can rewrite this. Okay? So I just move stuff around. So what does this say? Well, if I've got a given voltage, let's say 12 volts, it's fixed. If I have that voltage and I increase the distance, what does that do to the amount of charge I can store? It goes down. Let's say that I still have the same 12 volts, I have the same voltage, but I increase the area of the plates. What happens to the amount of charge I can store? It goes up. Okay? And the way that we actually think about this is, going back to this expression here, what we actually think about this as is we consider this piece here, which is just a constant based on the property of the capacitor. We chose this D and we chose the A. This we just call a constant C, which is called the capacitance. Okay? So we can rewrite this as Q equals C delta V. All right? And so I can say I have a capacitor which has a capacitance of C. And once you know that, then for whatever circuit you're dealing with, if you know the potential difference you're putting on that capacitor, you can figure out how much charge you're going to store. So it's, capacitance is a way to just factor out the geometry so that, depending on the kind of circuit I put this thing in, I can refer to how much charge it can collect. Okay? Okay, does this make sense? I mean, do people have any questions? No?
I have a question. Is the area and capacitor the area of one plate or whatever?
It's going to be the area. The way that these things are done, well, especially in this, what's called a parallel plate case, the area here and the area here are the same.
Okay.
And it's the reason it has to be that way is if this was bigger, then what would happen is you'd start to get E-field lines that are not parallel. You know, it just it keeps the symmetry. Okay? Okay, so, all right. So let's take a further step here. And actually, while I'm talking, why don't I give you this thing? This is, we actually use capacitors in one important way that you probably don't realize. This is something that, well, used to be at least, radios. So, and we'll talk about this later. But what happens is I have a bunch of parallel plates here. You'll be able to see it when I hand it around. And by turning this knob, I can change how much these plates overlap. Here, these plates don't overlap at all, so there's no capacitance. Okay? Here, I can turn it this way, they overlap completely, so there's a lot of capacitance. And it turns out that by just turning this knob, I can, in conjunction with other electronics components, and again, we'll talk about this later, I can actually change the frequency of electromagnetic waves that I'm sensitive to in a radio. Okay, so again, we'll talk about it later, but that is a way that capacitors are used. Okay, and they're very important. They come up all the time. Now, okay. Okay, and one way to the capacitance is the unit, the amount of charge a capacitor can store per unit potential difference. Okay, and the unit, I should have written it, but the unit of capacitance is called a farad, F-A-R-A-D, after Faraday, Michael Faraday. All right, now let's try an example here. So, I mean, a little more sophisticated example. So let's consider a case where we have a cylindrical conductor, and then inside of here, we're going to have another conductor. Let's say it's just a wire, okay? So hopefully this is relatively clear. And let's say that I have a positive charge Q on here, and therefore I'm going to have negative charge Q on this conductor. These are two conductors, okay? Let's say that the length is L, and then the radius of this inner conductor is A, and the radius of the outer conductor is B. Okay? So in this case, B is greater than A, and L is much, much larger than B. Okay? These are the kinds of, these two approximations are the things that allow us to now use results that we've already gathered before from Gauss's law. Okay? So these are coaxial, so the center of this cylinder is the same as the center of the thin wire, and the axis of it. And because of this, again, we're not going to worry about what life is like at the end of this thing. We're going to consider what life is like inside of it as if these are infinite cylinders. Okay? Now, I'm going to want to do exactly the same thing I did before. I know the voltage. Okay? And, you know, ultimately this thing is an E dot ds. And I obviously have a cylindrical symmetry. But I need to know what E is. Okay? So we need to use Gauss's law to figure out what this is. Does somebody want to suggest a surface that you would use to evaluate the electric field inside of there? Inside of the cylinder. So in here, I need to know what the electric field is. So what surface would I use? Somebody say a cylinder? Yeah. Okay? So you'd use a cylinder. If I drew this on end, I would have this. This is A, and this is B. And then I have the positive charges in here, so my electric field lines are like this. And I need to draw a surface that looks like this. Okay? I want to know where I am at some radial distance within this cylinder. Okay? Now, we did this before for just a line charge, but now we're wrapping around with an outer cylinder that has negative charge on it. So at a point here, how much does the charge on this outer surface contribute to the E field at that, at the Gaussian surface we just picked? So I have negative charge here and positive charge in here. And I'm drawing a cylindrical surface centered on here because I want to know the electric field at this point between the two cylinders. So how much does the outer charge contribute to the electric field at this point? Zero. Exactly. Okay? Okay, well, okay, and we know a couple other things. E is parallel to R, so R is the radial distance, right? So this is kind of a cylindrical example of what we just did with the plates, where E was parallel to the distance between the two plates. And we already did this, so I won't belabor the point. We only care about the electric field from this central plate, and so that is going to be 2k lambda over r. We already did this. This is from chapter 24. Okay? All right. So now I'm going to want to calculate, why don't I move that over here, E equals 2k lambda over r. Chapter 24. So now what I would like to do is I would like to be able to determine, just like we just did, what is the capacitance in this case. So how did we do it? Well, we got the electric field and then we used that with our, you know, because we know the voltage in terms of the electric field and then we use that to calculate the voltage. But here it's a little more complicated. So here, we want to know what is the potential difference from this surface to this surface. So this is going to be the potential difference from point B to point A. So this equals the negative of the integral from A to B, E, R, dr. So it's a cylindrical coordinate, so we'll just put them in radial coordinates. Now we know E. We wrote it down there. So this is actually negative 2k lambda integral from A to B of dr over r. Okay? And this integral is a standard integral in the back of your book. And so this piece is going to be log b over a. Okay? So you just look that up, and that's the integral that you have. Okay, fine. So that means that my delta volt, delta v, is negative 2k lambda log b over a, and now this tells me how to calculate the voltage, but what I want to know is what's a capacitance, okay? And the capacitance requires me to say that I have, the capacitance could be written as q over delta v, okay? So if I put that in, I have Q over negative 2K lambda log B over A. Okay? And, well, we don't care about the negative sign here because we just care about the total amount of charge. You never have a negative capacitance. And lambda is going to equal to the charge on this rod. It's a linear charge density. So it's the charge on that rod divided by the length of the rod. Yes? This is it's like the charge per area, except we're now dealing with a surface. We're dealing with something that basically the radius is so tiny we don't care. So it's a linear charge density, not an areal charge density. Okay? So in the case of a surface, you have sigma equals Q over A. But in this case, that central wire has got a linear charge density. So that's a lambda equals Q over L. Okay? Okay, so what... It's uniformly distributed over this inner wire, and then the negative of that charge is uniformly distributed over the surface of this outer cylinder. Okay? All right. So if I follow this calculation through and make my substitution of lambda, my Q's are going to drop out because I have a Q over L here and a Q there. And so what I end up with is the capacitance is going to equal L over 2K log B over A. Okay? Now again, as in the plate case, all I have is geometry. The length of the cylinder, okay, which is kind of like A, or area, in the old case. So as the length gets larger, the capacitance gets larger. And then in the bottom here, I have the ratio of the two radii, which is a measure of the distance between them, kind of like D, the distance between the two plates in our previous problem. So based on the geometry of how I draw this, I can calculate the capacitance.